I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country.
It's dangerously cold this morning. We have Rio feels in the single digits this morning, and that's going to be the name of the game throughout the day. And then tonight, frigid with a low of 8 degrees. This is dangerous stuff.
Complete whiteout. It was sporadic whiteouts where the wind was blowing so hard, you couldn't see very far ahead. And I believe that as people were braking, more cars were coming at faster speeds and just plowed into them. And then again, that whiteout was lasting long enough where you couldn't see those cars ahead.
I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. And we're kicking things off today with the Arctic blast that made its way as far south as Texas and Florida. The United States is in the grips of a polar vortex, bringing extremely cold air from Canada south and sending temperatures up to 20 degrees below averages in places like Detroit, Minneapolis, Chicago, and New York. On the way, whiteout snowfall caused a 100-car pileup in Michigan, made life dangerous for people who live or work outdoors, and killed pets left outside. Here's more from WWJ News Radio on safety.
What are some things to keep in mind about taking care of your pets in the wintertime?
Not all pets are kind of built for the cold. Some of our smaller breeds or seniors, our thin coat breeds, they are definitely more vulnerable. A lot of the products that we use, the salt and ice melt products, can be very irritating to paws and cause some GI upset if we don't kind of clean it off quickly after the exposure. Another important thing to consider is that, you know, watching for things like antifreeze exposure, because the ethylene glycol within that product is extremely toxic to pets, and it kind of has a sweet taste to it. So a small spill can be, you know, can be life-threatening. So just important things to keep in mind.
And what about, you know, taking care of their paws?
Sure. So ultimately, you know, using booties, if feasible or possible, is definitely ideal, but every pet's a little different in how well they'll tolerate it. You know, if kind of putting booties on each time they go outside just is, whether it's a feasible task or not, definitely wiping their paws after they come in from outside, and then considering like pet safe balms can be really good to kind of help moisturize and kind of prevent other issues during the winter months. And especially animals that are prone to allergies or other issues, kind of if we're overbathing or overusing products while they're already dry during these winter months, can lead to other issues.
And should you keep your pets indoors more in the winter?
I certainly think that we do need to take that into consideration. I mean, certain animals, for example, like outdoor cats, I think, you know, if they're accustomed to going out, it can be a hard adjustment to make. But, you know, if a quick consideration could be like they like to hide under, let's say, like a warm engine. So if your vehicle is parked outside, sometimes tapping the hood before you start it could certainly save a life. So that's just something to take into account if, you know, let's say you have strays or cats that are indoor-outdoor status. But there also are kind of these temporary kind of sod potty pads that you can use for, let's say, a balcony area or an area where for, you know, if, let's say, a longer walk isn't feasible, potty breaks, you know, can be utilized with something that's a little bit more convenient and safe.
And then what are some other safety hazards for them in the winter?
I would say that ultimately, you know, they can be a little bit more prone to things like, for example, space heaters or fires that we're using within the house. So kind of pet proofing things that may require additional supervision. Ultimately, things that we see commonly in the winter would be, let's say, joint pain flare-ups for, you know, ultimately the cold weather can worsen arthritis. And so, you know, touching base with your veterinarian, if you're noticing, let's say, a reluctance to go out or kind of a stiffness to their gait overall, you know, we can definitely see an uptick in cracked paws or issues with, let's say, you know, brittle or broken nails as a result to either, you know, the salt exposure, just cold in general. So trying to kind of find ultimately options that work for both you and your pet. But important considerations, especially for smaller breeds that are prone to respiratory issues like collapsing trachea or kind of a chronic bronchitis where coming in and outside can really trigger some breathing difficulties and intense coughing. So, you know, just being mindful if that's something that you're seeing in your pet, reaching out to your veterinarian, they can find some ways to help. I think ultimately that, you know, certainly winter can bring some risk, but ultimately trying to do your best to try to find a best fit, whether it be adding a new pet to your household in kind of a safe and responsible way, or, you know, trying to find things to keep an active dog occupied during these colder months are just all important things to consider.
It snowed in Texas this week, but you know where it's really, really cold? Greenland. Here's more on President Donald Trump's latest overtures, including a meme with him planting a U.S. flag on Greenland. Here's more from Tommy Tucker.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
But I just, you know, you watch the news here and you think about Greenland, and I understand the military significance, but it would seem like you got NATO and you got this alliance and you're picking a fight with our friends. And with that, let's go to Patrick Penfield, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How are you?
I'm all right. So let's talk about this potential trade or tariff thing that's going on with Europe and Greenland. I don't know how you want to start with this. Does Europe have a trade bazooka?
But they do. So they could do some type of retaliatory tariff against the United States. And not only would it be products, it would be services. It could be they could also do some stuff with IP. So, yeah, it could be, definitely a very terrible situation if it gets to that. So, Tommy, let me explain. So last year, the United States collected $195 billion in tariffs. In fiscal 2024, it was only $77 billion. So that's 150% increase. As you know, and your listeners know, right now there's tariffs in place with all these countries. So the EU pays 20%, UK pays 10%, Norway pays 15%. So what President Trump is proposing is to layer more tariffs on these countries unless they allow him to purchase Greenland.
What would the result of that be as far as this bazooka goes? What could they do back, and how would that affect the American consumer? And yeah, when we talk about Europe, do we break that down to specific countries within Europe?
Yeah. So, you know, when we look at Europe, they consider themselves, one entity, right? So President Trump is trying to go ahead and actually pick on each country, and he actually can't. So what the Europeans are calling is a trade bazooka. And so what they would do is they would limit the ability of banks, insurance companies to operate in the EU as the single market. They're going to tax, big tech, crypto companies. Probably the biggest extreme measure is they could bypass any U.S. patents or copyrights, which would be extremely devastating for pharmaceutical and the entertainment industry. And then they could ban American companies from any, government contracts in the EU. So, yeah, they've got a pretty big bazooka, trade bazooka, if they want to use it.
Money texted in, wants to know who pays this $195 billion in tariffs, up 150% from last year. Who paid for that?
Yeah, the companies that were importing goods, and then those companies in turn would pass along that cost to consumers. That would be, your listeners and myself.
So did the consumers pay? Did we, in essence, pay a tax on ourselves, or a tax on $195 billion went into the Treasury? Okay, where'd that money come from?
Yeah, it came from U.S. companies. Anybody that was importing goods from other countries, they paid that money, and that went to the U.S. Treasury. They, in turn, either absorbed it or they passed along the cost to consumers. And so I would imagine they probably pass along the cost to consumers.
But even if they absorbed it in the bigger economic model, that means either less profit for the company or less put back into the company or less dividend or whatever, right?
Absolutely.
Or less compensation. Yeah. So the money has to come from somewhere is what I'm saying.
You're absolutely correct. And most of it came from U.S. companies.
All right. So moving forward with this, how do you see this playing out? Because if the president were to invoke this plan, like what are some of the goods maybe from Germany or the U.K., Netherlands, France, et cetera, where Sweden, Norway, Finland, what would U.S. consumers wind up paying more for or not be able to get?
Yeah, so you're talking wine, aluminum, steel, German cars, you're talking about cheese, you're talking about food, you're talking about, you know, a whole category of just different things. So anything, you know, we do roughly about $1.7 trillion worth of trade with the EU. So it's significant. And unfortunately, if people don't back down or countries don't back down, then, you're going to see this tit-for-tat type thing, right? So the U.S. will enact our tariffs, and then they, in turn, the other countries will enact tariffs and issues like we talked about earlier.
And meanwhile, it's just the average person at home, one way or the other, that winds up paying for this, whether you hold stock in a company or whether you work for the company or whether you're paying higher prices, right?
Absolutely, Tommy. And this is the unfortunate thing. U.S. businesses, we like stability. We like to know exactly what, you know, we're going to be paying. So it causes a lot of issues within business, causes chaos, and this is just not good.
Be interesting to watch it unfold. Thank you, sir. Patrick Penfield, professor of supply chain practice at Syracuse.
So Greenland and tariffs and fights with our allies. For more on President Donald Trump's first year of his second term, here's KCBS.
It has been 1 year today since President Trump took office for his second term in the White House, and his administration continues to lead the U.S. into uncharted economic and political territory. For more on this, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by our KCBS political analyst, Mark Sandolo. Mark, good morning. First of all, how has President Trump's first year impacted the U.S. domestically?
Good morning, Steve. Well, the president gives himself modestly, as always, when asked what kind of grade he gave himself on the economy, he gave himself an A++++++. But consumers don't feel that way. And the reason for the disparity is the prices don't lie. And, you know, Trump correctly points out the stock market is at a record pace. The price of eggs has come down. The price of gasoline has come down. But overall, inflation looks almost identical to the way it looked when Joe Biden was in office in the last year. Grocery prices, forgetting about eggs for a minute, have gone way up. Coffee's way up. He promised every American that their energy price would be half of what it was after 1 year in office. Well, so now it's been 1 year. It's not half of what it was. It's about 4% more than what it was. And, you know, part of the problem that Trump, you know, created for himself by making it sound as if Joe Biden had single-handedly raised prices and he, as president, would single-handedly lower them. No president has the power to do that.
All right, that's domestically. Let's look at the global stage from Venezuela to Greenland. You never know what's going to happen next.
You know, this Greenland thing, I mean, people don't really know whether or not this is Donald Trump, American president, pretending he's a mad king to try to get Europe to give him concessions, whether they're on tariffs or whether just concessions on Greenland itself. Although they've already said he can do what he wants with Greenland, he just can't own it. This letter that he hears is a message he sent to the prime minister of Norway over the weekend is just remarkable. I mean, he says, I'm quoting now, considering your country decided not to give me the Nobel Peace Prize for having stopped 8 wars plus, I no longer feel an obligation to think purely of peace, although it will always be predominant. That is, I think a lot of people wondered whether that was legitimate. People didn't know whether to laugh, to cry, to be angry. The idea that anybody thinks of themselves as a Nobel Peace Prize winner, and that's what motivates them to push for peace. But without the prize and feeling jilted of the prize, they no longer feel an obligation to peace. That's terrifying for a lot of people. And Gavin Newsom is actually in Davos, where the president is headed later today. Gavin Newsom is there essentially telling people in Europe, look, he's just one guy. Stand up to him. because this is not the way that America feels.
Mark, this has been 1 year. I wonder sometimes if so many things happen that we almost get numb to some of these new developments, whether it's Greenland or whatever. I mean, can we even imagine what might happen in the second year?
Yeah, well, it's been nonstop, no question. I mean, just looking at this, it's estimated that he sent out over 6,500 social media messages in the first year. That's more than 18 a day. And there was a TV station up in Boston that looked, the most common word used is great. The second most common word used, Trump. Big no surprise here. I mean, I tell you this, the second term is going to be determined in many ways as to what the Supreme Court decides on limiting his power on issues like tariffs, which are before them, whether or not Democrats can capture one or both chambers of Congress, because that will put a check on him. But I can guarantee you this, a year from now, regardless of what happens, Donald Trump is going to give himself an A+.
All right, Mark, thank you. Our KCBS political analyst, Mark Sandlow.
That's an evaluation of President Donald Trump, but how are his adversaries faring? Here's more from KCBS on California's Governor Gavin Newsom and what's happening with homelessness.
California saw a 9% drop in homelessness in 2025. That is a figure that Governor Newsom is holding up as a sign that his policies are making a difference for the state's unhoused residents. But the reality on the ground may tell a different story. So, Phil, is this something the governor should be holding his head high about, or is he kind of burying the lead?
He's kind of doing both. You know, over the years, I don't know how many times you've done it, I've done it a number of times. You ask a politician a question and they answer it the way they want to. Statistically, the governor is correct. Didn't necessarily give the whole picture, but statistically, he's correct. According to a count of selected California counties, not all counties, we went from 93,000 unhoused people in 2024 to 84,000 in 2025. Okay, so that represents a 10% drop in the number of homelessness, particularly in L.A. and Southern California. We don't really have the latest numbers from San Francisco, but they're on par. But what he didn't say was that when he took office in 2019, there were only 74,000 homeless out on the streets. So in other words, it's dropped 10%, but it's actually increased 10,000 since he took office. And that's after, you know, 5 years of programs and billions of dollars to try to solve the problem. What we're finding out is that, yes, it's gotten better, but the reason it's gotten better because it was a whole lot worse before.
What went wrong before that made the homeless numbers go up? And then what are they doing better to bring those numbers down now?
Now, there's a whole lot of different reasons for why people wind up homeless. We have mental health. We have drugs. We have the economy. We have just an aging population that just couldn't stay in their housing. We have, and now they're in their cars. We have immigrants coming in or migrants coming in that can't afford, and they're in the RVs and such. There's a whole different slew of problems out there. But I would say that one of the things that has changed is that initially when we started having these problems, we were in the shelter business. The idea was to get people into shelter, welfare hotels, or wherever they could get four walls and a roof and some heat. And then there was a shift, and everybody was talking about, no, shelters are just for some place to sleep. What you need is a home. So what we did was we started going for long-term solutions. As a matter of fact, there was a push against overnight stays or short stays and go for the long-term. That didn't work. It just didn't work. We didn't get people off the streets. We didn't build the housing in near the numbers that were needed or the support services. Then in the last couple of years, the governor and others, including the San Francisco mayor, said, okay, we are going to just do something about what we see. And that is the tents. And in the last 2 years and 3 years, there's been a real push just to get the tents off the streets and away from the freeways. And so it looks better, at least. And that's what we're seeing, is we're seeing a push back to getting people in the short term just to get them off the streets. And that helps the governor with his numbers, because those numbers are going to be what he's judged by when he runs for president.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.